Happy Earth Day yesterday and every day. The first Earth Day celebration ever occurred on April 22nd, 1970, and I was there. Along with millions of other people across the United States, from elementary schools to universities to big cities. I was 18 years old. And I have some memories. It was the first time I ever tasted tofu. And that day, I learned how I could grow my own alfalfa sprouts in a jar in my dorm room. But it was also much more than that. Here in Madison, on a bright spring day, it was easy to feel love for the planet. And the mood was festive and hopeful. We could make changes happen via peaceful demonstration of concern for the environment. To put this all in perspective, remember that in April 1970, there was no Environmental Protection Agency, no Clean Water Act, no Clean Air Act. Yes, industries could belch pollution without restriction. Thanks, Wentzler. No municipalities offered recycling programs. DDT was still in widespread use to control mosquitoes in many communities, with its persistent presence in the environment, harming wildlife and humans. And less than a year before, the Cuyahoga River in Cleveland, Ohio, had actually caught fire. A river caught fire from the amount of industrial pollutants being dumped into it. That spring, I'd been noticing people wearing buttons with an E symbol that was also a stylized image of the Earth, and you can see one like it on the slide. That Earth Day, I stopped at a table on the library mall, I bought a button, and I talked with the people distributing information. I'd considered myself comparatively, for that time, unusually, environmentally conscious, but that conversation took me in a much stronger direction. Ecology was a new word to most people in 1970. Not many had ever stopped to think or had ever been taught about what we use refer to now as the interdependent web of all existence. Environmentalist Wisconsin governor and then Senator Gaylord Nelson, and yes, the state park around the corner of Lake Mendota is named after him, originated Earth Day. He conceived of Earth Day as a way of raising attention to environmental issues and gathering support for regulatory work to protect the planet's ecosystem. He wanted it to be more than a day of fruitless talking. He wanted it to be a day of action. And as a result of this raising of consciousness at a grassroots level, widespread actions and changes did begin to happen. A few examples. The Environmental Protection Agency was created when Richard Nixon, yes, believe it or not, Richard Nixon, signed an executive order establishing the EPA later that year. DDT was banned in the US in 1972. Lead gasoline, which had been a major environmental and health hazard, was banned for all new vehicles after 1975. Catalytic converters were required to reduce automobile air pollution, and leaded gas was gradually phased out of use. Cars became much more fuel efficient. And all this happened, in large part, because of the result of the Earth Day movement. Inspired by that Earth Day and the ones that followed, as the 70s continued, a groundswell of people began to take more and more personal and political actions for the environment. There was so much momentum. So many positive changes were made. It could only get better, right? And then the 1980s arrived. With Reaganomics, When control was seized by powerful forces that cared only to further their own wealth. All our environmental progress ran head-on into the idea that greed was good. And consumption culture took over, as many people were brainwashed by corporate manipulations and advertising. Thanks again, Wunsler. Not everyone, but many, many people. Unfortunately, that story of the Wunsler and the Lorax that we heard a few minutes ago became all too real. And just as a side note, in case you didn't know, that book, which was written in 1971, was banned in a California school district in 1989 because it was felt to portray the logging industry in a bad light. We ended up with the planetary mess we're in now. I lost my actual first Earth Day button long ago, but I still wear it in my heart, which is somewhat battered like the Earth Day button in the slide, and grieves for how the planet is still being destroyed. I feel like the Lorax. Unless.
Thank you, Deb. When planning this service, Deb, Reverend Karen, and I talked about how different generations are responding to the climate crisis. The reflection I am about to read reflects the anger of our young people, but also their resolve. This is an open letter penned by a collective of young people participating in climate protests every Friday by walking out in their schools to demand action, originally published in The Guardian. We, the young, are deeply concerned about our future. Humanity is currently causing the sixth mass extinction event of species, and the global climate system is at the brink of a catastrophic crisis. Its devastating impacts are already being felt by millions of people around the globe, yet we are far from reaching the goals of the Paris Agreement. Young people make up more than half of the global population. Our generation grew up with the climate crisis, and we will have to deal with it for the rest of our lives. Despite that fact, most of us are not included in the local and global decision-making process. We are the voiceless future of humanity. We will no longer accept this injustice. We demand justice for all past, current, and future victims of the climate crisis, and so we are rising up. Thousands of us have taken to the streets in the past weeks all around the world. Now we will make our voices heard. On March 15th, we will protest on every continent. This is from 2018. We finally need to treat the climate crisis as a crisis. It is the biggest threat in human history, and we will not accept the world's decision makers' inaction that threatens our entire civilization. We will not accept a life in fear and devastation. We have the right to live our dreams and hopes. Climate change is already happening. People did die, are dying, and will die because of it, but we can and will stop this madness. We, the young, have started to move. We are going to change the fate of humanity, whether you like it or not. United, we will rise until we see climate justice. We demand the world's decision makers take responsibility and solve this crisis. You have failed us in the past. You have continued failing us in the future, and we, the young people, will make change happen by ourselves. The youth of this world have started to move, and we will not rest again.
So friends, you've heard about the hope hurt that have been and are being felt, the hope and the hurt. And we know that there are a myriad of impacts that climate chaos has brought. People beyond the voices that Genevieve brought for us also being disproportionately affected, and inequities being multiplied. I want to invite us now to spend a little time in the part of the Work That Reconnects cycle of honoring our pain for the world. It isn't easy to do. It's uncomfortable to sit with some of the hard emotions that I'm gonna ask us to invoke. I invite you to do it anyway. To sit with knowing that for me, I'll be sitting with, knowing that the people in my generation and of my kinds of privilege are handing this world to younger people and less resourced people than I am, and that's hard. I do ask you to do it anyway, knowing that your feelings are yours, that you're not going to share them. I'm not going to invite you to share them. That you're in good company here, that we are together. So take a moment. Take a moment to settle your body, if you can. Whatever that means for you. Maybe get comfortable in your seat. Maybe close your eyes or focus your gaze. Maybe take a breath. Feel your chest expand and relax as you breathe. Feel your feet on the floor beneath you or wherever they are. Imagine that those feet are growing roots down deep into the earth. Roots that go way, way down. And find the roots of your neighbors and interconnect into a network way down. Let yourself be held by that network, supported in love. For the love does move through our roots. And as you are supported by that love, I will say four sentences. I'll leave a little quiet after each of them. And I'll invite you to take that quiet time to notice what you're feeling. The first sentence is the hardest one to hear. And I'll give you just a short space to sit with that one. At this point, it might not be possible to avert climate chaos. Take a breath. Feel your roots down deep in the earth. Number two. That is true, then creating peace and equity is more important than ever, because divisions between us will be encouraged to widen as resources become more scarce. Take a breath. Feel your roots down deep in the earth. Number three, you have skills and perspectives that are unique and needed, and so there is a place for you in that world. Take a breath. Feel your roots go deep. Number four, we will do that work together. And so there is still and always the possibility of justice and of joy and of singing and of shared spirit. Take a breath. Feel your roots down deep in the earth, intertwined with my roots and the roots of neighbors and strangers alike. Thank you for taking this step with me. This table holds symbols for some of the things we might be feeling. Stone is for fear. It's how our heart feels when we're afraid. It's hard and tight and contracted, right? I hold the stone for all of us who are holding fear. Leaves, these very dry old leaves, represent our sorrow, our grief. There is sadness, right? There's sadness for what we see happening to our world, to our lives, for what we're passing on, what is passing from us day to day. So I hold a leaf for all of us who are feeling sad. This empty vessel stands for our sense of need, our disillusionment, our hunger for what's missing. Hold this pitcher for all of us who feel emptiness. Stick is for our anger. There is anger and outrage that needs to be spoken for clarity of mind and purpose. It needs to be expressed. The stick is not for hitting, it's not for waving around, but it's for holding really hard, strong enough to hold. And I hold this for all of us who are feeling anger. Finally, this bowl in the center is filled with tea lights, papers. It's for our awareness, for our willingness to acknowledge the changes that have come and that will continue to come. And it's for our resolve to continue the work of love and justice with joy and with singing and with our lights shining forth, intentional and undaunted. I invite you, after the service, to go talk with Tom Boswell. Tom, wave at us. There you go. And with Kelly Kearns, who's way in the back there. They've set up some tables in the foyer with some brochures and some information about actions you can take here in Madison on climate issues. For now, I invite any of you who want to come forward quietly. Take a tea light. Take a resource sheet. Take them with you and see what you can do as you move through the next steps of the work that reconnects, as you move into, can't read it from over there, seeing with new eyes and going forth, using what you have learned about yourself in this space. If you want to pick something up, please go around the ends of your rows and grab it, and then come back up the center aisle so you're not going in lots of different directions. If you are with us virtually, you can find the information that's on these sheets on the Worship Archive page where today's reflection will be posted eventually. I gave Susan very little notes for that. Thank you, friends.